One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
I'm Kathy with a K.
And I'm Kathy with a C.
And this is Killer Destinations. Today's destination is Chowchilla, California. Located in Central California, about 250 miles north of Los Angeles, Chowchilla is a close-knit and quiet farming town with about 20,000 residents. The word Chowchilla is an anglicized spelling of Chowchilla, the name of an indigenous Yokuts people who historically inhabited the area in and around Central California. On May 22, 1912, Orlando Robertson, a teacher, farmer, and real estate speculator from Pennsylvania, purchased the Chowchilla Ranch and divided over half of this ranch into tracts for sale to farmers. The northeast corner of the property was set aside to be the site of the town, which became known as Chowchilla when it was incorporated in 1923. The small Central Valley town of Chowchilla is home to two state prisons, one for men and one for women, which provide jobs to the area. But the Fossil Discovery Center is a much better place to visit. You can see the preserved remains of animals from 700,000 years ago, like Columbian mammoths, saber-toothed cats, and the largest bear to ever walk the earth, the 12-foot-tall, short-faced bear. The Chowchilla Western Stampede Cattle Drive, down the main street of Robertson Boulevard, which began in 1958, is an exciting tradition that marks the official opening for the Chowchilla Western Stampede events. The weekend activities attract contestants from all over the western United States. Winners earn cash prizes, western belt buckles, and saddles. But in 1976, the eyes of the world were drawn to Chowchilla, not for its cowboy heritage, but for the biggest mass kidnapping ever to occur in the United States.
In Chowchilla, California, on a warm summer day in July of 1976, 26 elementary school students and their bus driver mysteriously disappeared. Here's what happened. It was Thursday, July 15th, 1976, the second to the last day of summer school, and students from Dairyland School were treated to a trip to the Chowchilla Fairgrounds swimming pool. The students on the bus ranged in age from 5 to 14, and the heat of the summer was bearing down on Central California, so the pool was a welcome treat. The Dairyland school bus driver was Fred Edward Ray, who went by Ed, and Kathy even allowed the kids to call him by his first name.
My parents would not have approved.
Exactly.
I would have had to call him Mr. Ray, even if everybody else was calling him Ed.
He was a well-loved man who graduated from Chowchilla High School, became a dairy farmer, and then changed careers later to become a bus driver. He had been driving a bus for 26 years on this fateful July day. After the field trip, Ed began his typical route to take the kids home. At the third stop, 7-year-old Susan got off the bus. She was the last child off the bus that day as it pulled away from her stop with 26 of her fellow students on board. After the field trip, Ed began his typical route to take the kids home. At the third stop, 7-year-old Susan got off the bus. She was the last child off the bus that day as it pulled away from her stop with 26 of her fellow students on board. 13-year-old Pamela was at the fourth bus stop waiting for her 12-year-old sister to get off. Pamela said the bus just drove by without stopping. After that, the bus disappeared. When kids weren't home as expected, parents began calling around to find out where they were. The bus was officially reported missing at 4:15 that afternoon. Many of the frantic parents went to the Chowchilla Fairgrounds where the pool was located to search for their children, but they were not there. Madera County Sheriff Ed Bates was alerted to the missing children and immediately did two things. He called the governor's office, and at this time Jerry Brown was serving his first term, and he also called the FBI. He told them it appeared that 26 children had been abducted. Then he announced to the public that they would search the whole state if they had to, and the entire United States if necessary, to bring those kids home. FBI agents were dispatched immediately and fanned out to interview the parents, most of whom were gathered at the recently opened Chowchilla Police Station. And Kath, I think it was actually a substation for the Madera County Sheriff's. I don't think the Chowchilla had their own city police department for like a couple decades after that.
Oh, I would have assumed it was a couple of years after this.
Yeah.
But I agree with you, because Madera County sheriffs are all over that area.
Exactly. All over that county.
It's weird.
It's strange.
Why don't they just go home?
The place is lousy with them. Deputies retraced the bus route and spoke to Susan's parents, who had met her at the bus that day. They said there was nothing unusual about the bus, and they hadn't noticed any other vehicles in the area when Susan got dropped off. Everything seemed typical. But one 11-year-old said that she typically watched the bus leave her home and drive around the bend, and then she'd go inside. On this July day, as the bus drove away from her home, she saw a white van pass the bus before it hit the bend, and then it went out of her view.
This little girl should be an FBI agent now, because what kind of situational awareness is that at that age to notice something like that?
I know, but I also think kids have they're not filtered like we are. Like they see something, they remember it, and it's just pure information. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know.
According to an AP article and the Merced Sun Star, other residents also reported a mysterious white van in the area in recent weeks. Law enforcement believed it to be one of the county's mobile health units that was working in the area. In addition to FBI and Madera County deputies, the California Highway Patrol was placed on alert as to the missing school bus. Still, no word.
Then, at 7:20 p.m., this is now nearly 3 hours after the children were reported missing, the school bus was found. It was spotted from the air by two pilots who were sent up to search the surrounding farmland. The bus was located in a dry canal bed off Highway 152 between a cornfield and an almond orchard. It was hidden among a grove of bamboo just over a mile from its last stop. But Kath, the bus was empty. Investigators found two sets of tire tracks superimposed on the bus tracks, which told them multiple vehicles were involved. Authorities towed the bus out and roped off the area. Upon closer inspection, the tire tracks showed that vehicles left the area after the bus was parked. Inside the bus, they didn't find any blood or evidence of foul play, and investigators could not determine a motive. The sheriff suggested some possibilities, which surprised me, Kath, because most of the time they don't speculate like we do.
Right. And maybe in 1976 they did.
Maybe they did. And we at least give speculation warnings.
Right.
He did no such thing. Yeah. But the sheriff's speculation was that it could have been a deranged person or someone out for personal revenge, someone who wanted to make parents suffer, a terrorist plot, or a kidnapping for ransom. But no ransom demand had been made. It was revealed in an Associated Press article that the only clues in the area were two cotton swabs, gauze, and a plastic cup about 75 yards from where the bus was found. But the sheriff had to admit all of that could have just been trash. According to a UPI article in the Palo Alto Times, about a mile and a half from the bus, a man's shirt and a child's pair of pants were found. However, no connection to the clothing was revealed to the public. Madera County health officials actually informed law enforcement that they did not have any white or cream-colored vans used as mobile health units that had been in the area recently. In addition to the school bus, a bola was put out for a white van believed to be traveling between Chowchilla and Los Baños.
According to the Merced Sun Star, the San Joaquin Valley farmland was searched throughout the night after the bus went missing despite thunder and lightning storms. In addition to law enforcement, nearly 100 locals also helped look for the kids, some on horseback, some in trucks, and some in cars. But they had no luck finding them. At this point, the entire nation was holding its collective breaths and praying for their safe return. Again, investigators were stumped because no ransom had been demanded. Then, on the evening of July 16, 1976, an unexpected phone call came in. The children and the bus driver had been located over 100 miles away in Livermore, California, and all 26 children and the bus driver had been buried alive. According to court records, here's what happened. As bus driver Ed Ray was driving his normal route and on his way to his fourth stop, he approached an intersection where there was a white van parked across the roadway in front of him. He stopped behind it, and that's when all hell broke loose. Three men, all wearing nylon stocking masks, literally they were wearing women's pantyhose over their head.
I hope it was not used.
There was nothing in the articles I read about that.
I wish they'd clarify it.
I know. These men jumped out of the van and at gunpoint ordered Ed Ray to open the bus door. Two of the masked men commandeered the bus. One drove the bus and one kept watch with a shotgun over the kids and the bus driver. And the third man drove off in the white van. So, Kath, when I was doing research for this episode, I was watching a bunch of videos and whatever else. I feel like it was a interview of Ed Ray. I honestly don't remember. But what he was saying is that some of the kids were so little, they really didn't fully appreciate what was going on.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. Like, I mean, how shocking. These two men, one has a gun, one has a sawed-off shotgun. And, you know, here they are on your bus. So I guess the man who was tasked with watching the kids.
With the shotgun.
Exactly. The man who's sitting there with a shotgun. So he had the pantyhose on his head. So so the legs of the pantyhose were like down by his ears. Oh. This little five-year-old girl was staring and staring and staring. And finally she goes, "Are you the Easter bunny?"
Oh, the innocence of children.
I know. And I was like, look, whatever article I was reading, it was basically saying like the oblivion of the little kids was like evidenced by that question. They drove to a nearby wash that was about a mile away and it was not visible from the road. That was a location that Kathy mentioned previously that was camouflaged by bamboo. Here, a second van, a green van, was stashed, and it was a former military cargo van. Anyway, both vans had been prepared by the kidnappers. The rear windows were blacked out, and the interiors were equipped with soundproof paneling. The vans pulled up next to the bus, and every child and the bus driver stepped off the bus and into a van. It was believed that the kidnappers did not want children's footprints seen in the dirt. The vans had no seats, and the kids were herded into the pitch black vans and sat on the floor of the van. It was overcrowded. They had no food, water, or bathroom breaks.
And little kids like that. I mean, I know some of them, you said they ranged in age from 9 to 14.
5 to 14.
5 to 14, that's what I said. But those little kids can't hold it.
The vans drove off to an unknown destination, and Kath, according to the city of Chowchilla's website, they were driven around for 11 hours in these vans.
But Livermore is only like 100 miles away. That's not 11 hours.
Correct.
So what did they do?
I have no idea.
Do you have speculation?
I do.
What is it? I feel like I'm pulling teeth here.
I have a feeling they were taking random roads because where the wash was, I want to say it was Highway 152. I can't remember. Did we say
it Highway? Was? Okay. Yeah, it was 152.
That's a fairly major road. And when I say major, it now has two lanes in each direction. Back then, it might have had one. I don't know. I speculate that they were just taking random little farm roads. I am sure that they were not on the main highways. Anyway, 11 hours driving around. When they reached their destination, it was 3:30 in the morning, and when they came to a stop, nobody told the children where they were or what was happening, and of course, the kids were terrified. Kat, everything I read said that Ed, the bus driver, was trying very hard to be a calming influence on the kids. We're going to do what they say. Everything's going to be okay. You're okay. You know, this kind of thing, because yeah. As you can imagine, once one kid started to cry, they all started to cry.
And the older kids, the ones that were like teenagers or preteens, they're going to have a clue to what's going on.
Right. And by the way, it was 19 girls and 7 boys.
After reaching their destination, one by one, each captive was taken from the vans. And Kath, like we said, especially for the older kids, that had to have set off a new wave of fear.
Oh, totally.
According to court records, Ed Ray was taken first. He got out of the van and under cover of a connecting tent-like canopy, he was told to climb down into a hole that had been dug in the earth. He found himself in an old furniture delivery truck that had been buried in the ground.
And Kathy, just imagine you're in this sort of like vast space. I mean, there were trees and there were some like scrubby things, but literally imagine like you come across, it looked to me like it was almost a rectangular hole, but literally it's just like a hole in the middle of nowhere. It looked completely natural and the earth around it looked totally natural. Like, you see, like it was.
Yeah, that's kind of creepy.
I know.
Ed then assisted each child as they came down the ladder and into the truck. But Kath, before each child was sent down, the kidnappers got their name, age, and took personal items from some of the children. At this point, the hostages were told that they would remain in the truck for 24 to 48 hours. The ladder was then taken and the hatch was closed. Then the three kidnappers sealed the roof opening with a heavy steel plate placed over the hole, and then they put two 100-pound industrial batteries on top. Then a piece of plywood was put on top of that and buried under 2 feet of dirt. Court records say the buried furniture truck measured 26 feet long, nearly 7 feet wide, and 8 feet in height. The kidnappers had cut 3 holes into the van's walls, and lengths of flexible 4-inch wide ribbed hoses ran from 2 of these holes to connecting intake and exhaust fans that had been powered by several 12-volt electric batteries. Over the wheel wells, they'd placed a rectangular wooden box with holes on the top to serve as their toilets. Inside the truck were mattresses, several blankets, dry food and chips, and 10 5-gallon containers of water.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
So, Kath, one of the things I read is that in order for the kids to, like, get through, they started singing songs.
I'm assuming this was Ed's direction.
Well, I don't know necessarily, but probably.
He probably had grandkids at that age.
Yeah, who knows? Anyway, so they started singing If You're Happy and You Know It. It's like, if you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. And none of the kids clapped. So then they changed it to If You're Sad and You Know It, clap your hands.
And then all the kids.
Exactly. They all started clapping. And they were also singing, this cracks me up, this is, of course, 1976, they were singing Boogie Fever, and they were also singing Get Down Tonight, and which cracked me up because, like, this is from Casey and the Sunshine Band, and it totally brought back a horrible memory from my youth.
Uh-oh.
I think I actually shared this on a prior podcast, but when I was young, I totally had like the musical taste of a 50-year-old, you know, like I did not know any of the popular bands or whatever. Anyway, I'm probably in about sixth grade, and this is what made me remember is because Casey and the Sunshine Band was popular. She comes up to me randomly. I'm just sitting there doing work in class, and she goes, what's your favorite band? And I was so caught off guard, and I was also very aware that I was a nerd, and the truth came out of my mouth. I go, Helen Reddy.
Did you start singing I Am Woman, Hear Me Roar?
I didn't, but I could have.
You should have.
Oh, my God. And she started laughing hysterically. She turns around. She's like, she likes Helen Reddy. And in my head, I'm like, oh, if she only knew that I also loved Anne Murray and Neil Diamond.
You totally had the musical taste of a 50-year-old.
Basically anything my mom listened to, I listened
to. Well, that makes sense, though.
Yeah. Anyway, so like there were like little stories that I heard that the kids had done while they were in captivity.
To pass time and not be scared.
Exactly. But one of the things that I thought was also funny is there was a girl who was getting transferred from the van and into the truck, okay, into the earth. And so, like you said, the kidnappers were taking down everyone's name before they got in. And so they asked her what her name was. And she goes, my name's Pudentane. Ask me again. I'll tell you the same. which I thought was like,
I don't know who she is, but I like her.
I know. I like her. She's a little sassy girl.
Exactly.
And they're like, no, tell us your real name. And so she did. But I thought, God, who has the nads to say that, you know?
Exactly. In the midst of terror.
Exactly.
She did well in life.
Yeah.
After hours of desperate concern whether their captors would return to release them safely, Ed Ray and a 14-year-old boy named Michael Marshall tried to pry open the hatch. So remember, as Kathy said, this old furniture truck is 8 feet high, so they started stacking the mattresses that had been left in the truck for them to form a platform to get them to the roof of the truck, which they did, and they were able to get up there. But initially, they could not get that hatch to budge because, remember, as we know, 2 100-pound batteries were placed on top, plus plywood, plus 2 feet of dirt. But they kept at it. And it was reported that as Ed was slightly able to move the steel hatch, 14-year-old Michael wedged a piece of wood into the opening. Michael then pushed and pounded over and over, trying to move the 100-pound batteries and dig away at the dirt. But, you know, as you can imagine, as he's doing this, dirt is just crumbling all around them, which had to be scary, too, because you don't want that landslide. But at 14, Michael was relentless, and I love that. His efforts eventually paid off. 16 hours after being buried, the hatch was now open. Michael went out first to scope out their surroundings. And Kath, I have to imagine he was the oldest.
I think he was.
But of course, he was also terrified that he would pop his head out and the kidnappers would be standing there waiting for him to do that. But he did it anyway, knowing that he had no idea where he was, and all he saw around him was heavy machinery and equipment that had been scattered around this large vacant plot of land. But he also saw a building. So one by one, the kids were lifted out. Ed and the children climbed out of their prison and walked toward what turned out to be a guard shack. It was 8 p.m. the day after the kidnapping when a guard at the California Gravel and Rock Quarry in Livermore saw a man with a couple dozen kids walking toward his office on the quarry property. At first, the guard had no idea who they were or why they were at the quarry, but finding out that they were the kids who were plastered all over the news, he immediately called the police. The police came and transported the kids, ironically, on a bus, which you would have thought they'd be like, let's get some vans. Let's get a couple cars.
Right.
They took them to the Santa Rita Rehabilitation Center in Alameda County, the county in which Livermore is located, where the truck was found, and just adjacent to Madera County. After hours of questioning by police, the children and bus driver Ed Ray returned safely to Chowchilla, again on a bus, this time with a police escort, though, and it was just before dawn on July 17th, 1976, 2 days after their kidnapping. As you can imagine, as Kathy had said, this was huge international news. And so everybody knows that they've been found, right? They've been on buses twice. So, you know, people are seeing them.
And everybody knows where the parents are located.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Welcome to 1976. Probably they're like, we found them and here's the addresses of everyone.
Listen to this. One of the newspapers actually said, here's who we know who was on the bus to date. And they only have the names of 9 kids, but they posted their names and their ages. And by the grace of God, there was no addresses attached to it, which actually shocked me.
But yeah, you know, because we've talked about that a lot. Like back then, it was like, here's their phone number, their address, their social security number, and their driver's license
totally.
Number.
Don't go bother them.
Exactly. But yeah, so they are greeted by this horde of international news media who documented the children's reunification with their desperate parents. And Kath, members of the press interviewed kids to the extent that it obviously was allowed by parents, meaning you and I would not have been interviewed by the press if we were involved in this. But one of the press members went up to one of the boys on the bus and said, what do you want to be when you grow up? And the kid looks at him and he goes, not a bus driver. He and Pudding Tane Man.
Totally.
They are just rock stars. I love them.
Although this was the 70s in a farmland. You know what I mean? Like, these kids were tough kids. As the rock quarry was searched by local law enforcement and the FBI, it was clear that this plot was not something that could spring up overnight. The truck had been buried 12 feet down and had been modified to hold captives. Meticulous planning went into this. So now law enforcement needed to know who it was that had unlimited access to the quarry to take the time necessary to dig a massive hole without being noticed. The owner of the California Rock and Gravel Quarry was Frederick Nickerson Woods III. It was discovered that his son, 24-year-old Frederick Woods IV, had keys to the quarry, granting him unrestricted access. And it came to light that young Fred Woods, along with two of his friends who were brothers, James and Richard Schoenfeld, aged 24 and 22, previously faced charges of motor vehicle theft, resulting in probationary sentences. Less than a week later, the FBI meticulously combed through the expansive 78-acre estate belonging to the Woods family, owners of the quarry, and inside the 24-year-old's bedroom, investigators unearthed journals, a draft of a ransom demand, maps, meticulous notes, detailed plans, receipts pertaining to the procurement of the van and trailer, counterfeit ID cards, and one of the guns used in the abduction. And they also found a Jack-in-the-Box hamburger wrapper with the names and ages of each abducted child written on it. The uncovered documents showed the strategy was to have a ransom drop from a plane into the remote terrain of the Santa Cruz Mountains under the cover of darkness, followed by a clandestine retrieval operation. Investigators also found a rental contract for a storage facility where the vans used in the kidnapping were located. Ultimately, investigators determined three things. Number one, the Dairyland School was arbitrarily selected because it would be far enough away from the quarry site during the anticipated intensive search of the surrounding 100-mile area. Number two, they were going to ask for a ransom of $5 million to be paid by the state of California. And number three, the furniture van was buried instead of simply being guarded above ground because the ransom recovery plan required all three participants. And Kath, one of the things that investigators realized during the search of all of this and just the documents that they uncovered was that the furniture truck was actually buried in 1975. And that makes sense because they think they were planning this for about a year and a half, but they buried the truck in the ground the year prior. So all the terrain looked normal.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
So like, anybody flying overhead wouldn't be like, that looks it's recently dry.
Exactly. Freshly tilled soil or whatever. I mean, you know, so if it rained and, you know, whatever. Anyway, one of the things investigators also discovered was that none of the perpetrators wanted the kids harmed. And in the event the ransom was not paid as demanded, or if any of the children required medical attention or got hurt in any way, the plot was to be aborted and the victims immediately released.
The public was made aware of the three persons of interest, and a week after the kids were freed, 22-year-old Richard Schoenfeld surrendered to the Alameda County District Attorney with his podiatrist father and his attorney by his side. He told law enforcement that his brother James and their friend Fred Woods were his fellow kidnappers. But by the time Richard surrendered, the two were on the lam. Or as we like to say,
they dipped.
They dipped. According to journalists Herb Mitchelson and Wayne Wilson of the Sacramento Bee, within 2 weeks after the kidnapping, James Schoenfeld was caught near his home in the San Francisco peninsula of Menlo Park. By the way, I know a lot of people don't know California. These guys, well, their parents, were loaded.
They lived in really nice areas.
Fred Woods was caught by Canadian Mounties in Vancouver, Canada. According to court records, the actual conspiracy evolved from an earlier plan to produce a movie based upon a fictional mass kidnapping. The elaborate plan was apparently motivated by an overpowering drive to achieve independent financial success, a theme echoed by their parents during the men's adolescent years.
This is one of the things that kind of surprised everybody and drew an additional amount of attention is that all three of these young men came from fairly privileged backgrounds. And so it's like, wait, what? Why'd you do this?
Right.
You know what I mean?
So one of the Schoenfeld brothers and Fred were actually in debt as the result of an unsuccessful effort to restore and relocate a historic peninsula mansion.
So, Kath, it's interesting because the court records reference this mansion, but they don't explain it.
That's helpful.
Yeah, exactly. So we looked into it, and it turned out that about a year before the kidnapping, one of the Schoenfeld brothers and Fred decided that they were going to make money by preserving the oldest home in Mountain View, California. So they struck a deal with the city of Mountain View. They were going to move it and restore the 15-room house, which was built in 1867 by Henry Rengsdorf, who apparently came to California hoping to strike it rich during the gold rush. So they made an agreement with the city of Mountain View that they were going to pay $23,000 to move the mansion to a new site $13,000 to have the house moved, and then $66,000 to restore it so it would be habitable. So they raised enough cash to purchase the city-owned lot and move the home, but they couldn't come up with the $60,000 to actually renovate and finalize the deal. So the fact that they ended up in debt trying to rescue this old mansion and ultimately make money was part of their motivation for hatching this kidnapping scheme.
But many said that this plot was out of character for the men and represented what they said was a delusional lifelong pattern of judgmental unreality. But the Madera County Sheriff didn't see it that way. He called Fred Woods a sociopath. But the meticulously planned plot failed for a very, very simple reason. The telephone lines connecting to the Chowchilla Police Department were inundated with calls from media outlets, distressed families, and concerned citizens from all over the United States and the world. The kidnappers simply couldn't get through on the phone to communicate their $5 million demand.
Isn't that crazy?
That might have spurred call waiting.
I mean, seriously. And one of the things about the plot, like specifically the $5 million, they wanted the state of California to pay it, which I thought, that's genius.
It is.
The state would have kicked up the money.
Yeah. For 26 kids?
Yeah.
In a heartbeat.
And like at some point when they were being interviewed, one of them said something like, we needed to take children and we needed to take more than one so we could get the amount of money that we demanded. And we knew that children were precious. So we knew the state would pay.
Wow.
I'm like, yeah. But I mean, not getting through on the phone lines.
And back in 76, you know what they heard?
Exactly.
So, Kath, you're the kidnappers. You can't get through. What do?
Go back to Jack in the Box.
And then you go to bed.
Right.
I don't know that they went to Jack in the Box, but probably. They were so tired from all of this work that they'd done, right? Digging and kidnapping. And they're like, all right, we can't get through. Let's go to bed. We'll get up. We'll regroup. We'll call again. Right? Thinking that for whatever reason, we'll be able to get through. They go to bed, they wake up several hours later, they turn on the news, and what's all over the news? The kids had gotten out.
They're like, ruh-roh.
Exactly. I think that they were way more than that. And they just couldn't believe it. Ultimately, all three men were indicted and charged with kidnapping for ransom and robbery.
And so what happens is they all were in agreement to plead guilty to the kidnapping and robbery charges, which could have brought a life sentence with the possibility of parole. But then the district attorney wanted to push for a life sentence with no parole.
LWOP.
Exactly. So they added charges of bodily injury. Like, so it would be like an aggravated robbery, an aggravated kidnapping kind of thing. Anyway, so they did 6 counts of bodily injury. And so the defendants were like, oh, wait a second, this is not what we, you know, bargained for. And so the judge let them withdraw their guilty plea, and they simply went to a court trial on the issue of bodily injury. And the trial judge said, yes, this qualifies. The judge decides that 3 of the victims qualified as having bodily injury. So now they're facing life in prison, exactly, without the possibility of parole. As a result, they all received mandatory life sentences, but they appealed on the issue of bodily injury. And so bodily harm is generally defined as, you know, one person touching another against his will with physical force, intentional, it's hostile, it's aggravated, yada, yada, yada. But these kids had injuries like I cut my toe, I skinned my knee, you know, that kind of stuff. And so the Court of Appeal is like, no, this is not, like, the Court of Appeal gave an example of like a rape victim getting beat up. And they're like, this is not that. This is just kids who were incidental to the situation receiving these cuts and bruises. So the appellate court struck the bodily injury counts and essentially were like, you guys are all in prison for life with the possibility of parole.
And Kathy, what's interesting is, so this appellate court, it was a 3-judge panel, all right? They're the ones who heard it and made the determination. One member of the panel was Judge William Newsom, who was a very strong believer in rehabilitation for felons. After he retired, Judge Newsom actually became an outspoken advocate for the Chowchilla kidnappers and began calling this notorious, horrific crime just a youthful stunt that had no vicious aspect to it at all.
That is unbelievable.
Can you imagine how the victims and their families and friends felt when they heard that?
I know.
But here's what I think is interesting. So the judge has since passed, but he lived long enough to see his son, Gavin, elected California's 40th governor just after the second term of Jerry Brown. In 2012, Richard Schoenfeld was released. And so in 2015, Governor Jerry Brown, who, as we said, was governor at the time this kidnapping occurred, he released one of the kidnappers, James Schoenfeld. So now we have to fast forward to 2022, and the governor, as we said right now, is Governor Newsom, the son of Judge It's Just a Youthful Stunt Newsom, released Fred Woods, the mastermind, at the age of 70 after Woods was denied 16 times for parole.
Bus driver Ed Ray died in 2012 at the age of 91. And on February 26, 2015, his birthday, the city of Chowchilla officially renamed the city's largest park, Edward Ray Park. Until very recently, Michael Marshall, the 14-year-old's heroic efforts went unnoticed. Then in 2023, there was a new documentary produced by CNN and Max. It was called Chowchilla, and Michael Marshall was prominently featured.
Now, Kath, according to CBS News, and this was a 2020 article, Fred Woods was the beneficiary of a trust fund because of his parents' considerable worth. At one point, it was actually estimated to be more than $100 million, to which Fred Woods' attorney said, oh, it's nowhere close to that, but would never reveal the actual amount.
Of course.
Now, in 2016, this is 40 years after the kidnapping, a group of the Chowchilla survivors filed a lawsuit against the three kidnappers. Basically, what they said was that for all of the changes that their life permanently had as a result of what happened, they believed they were entitled to some compensation from the three kidnappers, especially considering the worth of their families.
And one of the things that we found out, which I didn't even know, was that the statute of limitation was extended because these culprits were in prison.
And it turned out that Woods used his trust fund to reach a settlement. Each of the 26 surviving children was paid an amount. This amount was not disclosed, but one survivor, and I have to imagine it's the I don't want to be a bus driver or Puddin' Tane, characterized the amount as enough to pay for some serious therapy, but not enough to buy a house.
A granite monument was dedicated to Ed Ray and the 26 children who underwent their harrowing ordeal. Their monument is located adjacent to the Chowchilla Police Department to mark the place where the victims were reunited with their families. All right. Thanks for listening. And we're going to go on YouTube soon. We keep saying that, but we really mean it.
We do really mean it. In our hearts.
And our format's going to be a little different. It's not going to be so scripted.
Yeah, we're kind of struggling a little bit with this change that we're going to have to do and how we're going to be able to transition. I mean, it's going to be different.
Exactly.
So stick with us. We'd love to hear positive, constructive comments.
Yeah, if you have anything negative to say, just keep it to yourself.
Engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.